The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning, and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Tuesday, the 26th of July, 2022, and you're on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. A yawning this morning to everybody. If you're waking up late, you may still think it's 6 a.m. in the morning, 5 a.m. in the morning. It is dark out there. And it leads me to ask the question, would you rather be in the path of potential hurricanes, right, hoping that they're going to divert and move away from you? Or would you rather be in the location where hurricanes form, so you only ever catch the beginning of the hurricane, right? So your interaction is always mild. Like, it's a ton of flooding because you live in New Providence and we don't have any urban planning. But other than that, right, it's quite minimal damage. Would you rather be in the potential path of hurricanes and play the odds that you won't get hit by a hurricane? Or would you rather be in the place where hurricanes form, where they start as small storms and they get a little larger before their parents kick them out and push them onto the world? That's what this gray sky this morning made me think of. And so I can introduce, welcome back, Mr. Mark Palmer.
Thank you. Welcome.
On this World News Tuesday, I sent you out into the world last week. You went somewhere, gallivanting, and now you're back. With us, glad to have you back.
Gallivanting to the island of Eleuthera.
That's what they do in Eleuthera. Oh, where else?
The one at Rock Sound. Ooh. I went and spent a week down at the One Eleuthera Foundation.
That's gallivanting town. I hear they're having a good time in Eleuthera. In fact, what I've been hearing is that a lot of young professionals, a lot of younger Bahamians, are really considering moving to Eleuthera and establishing their industries or their careers.
And it's happening because there's some great opportunities there. Kieran Smith moved from UB.
Okay.
And he's now the chief operating officer of One Eleuthera Foundation. We have Tamika Galanis going to come back and run the Eleuthera Arts and Cultural Center. So I think there's some great opportunities where you can, you know, make your impact, plus also get paid a good and fair wage. You know,
yeah.
I think that one of the issues that a lot of Bahamians left, the brain drain, because the opportunities
didn't exist,
especially the creative ones where you want to express yourself and make money too.
Yeah, right? And the lack of understanding that you still need infrastructure in place. You could have the brightest minds in your country, but unless they have a functional, easily read, like coherent system to plug into, all of that talent is wasted and lost. And that's what young people are doing. Young people are going to where there are systems that they can plug in already. Because the education that they have has prepared them to be a part of these spaces. We want them to come home and attempt to do what they do without these spaces. Because we only see the creation of new things and new spaces as disruptors to what it is that we already do and what it is we've established. Very singular-minded, very hyper-individualistic, and very silo mentality. Mm-hmm. Not understanding that, A, you force these children to go to school, to become a part of a world that you refuse to acknowledge, you refuse to adapt to, all for the purpose of holding on to your perceptions of power and your position in what some people call the power structure, and I call the Ponzi scheme, right?
And once you go to the university in the States, right, you see it's set up differently. You know, you can make your impact. You have agency. And Kieran Chase was telling me five Bahamians went to his college. And I don't remember which one it was, but he said four of them stayed. He was the only one who came back. And the reason he came back was because he started his own business in Telkey. So unless you're an entrepreneur, you don't really have the... those kind of opportunities.
Right. And so at one level, we're talking about the sort of the infrastructure of an industry, right? I'm a technician. I'm a computer technician. It means that I have to have IT professionals. I got to have parts, repair people and salespeople who understand the industry, connected to the suppliers. It's not just me one doing what I'm doing. And so that's one level of it. The second level of it is that you need the physical infrastructure in place to be able to do what you want to do. You tell people, come home, come be, we need nurses and doctors. I want you to go work in the clinic in Mayaguana. I'm going to send MacGyver down with you so you could make it make sense. For those of you from 1989, y'all know who MacGyver is? MacGyver working at BTC. We used to have a MacGyver working at BEC, Ministry of Works. I sure we used to have a MacGyver in the AG's office too. I don't know where they went. I don't know why you all phase out them departments, but we used to have nice things. Anyway, today, Mark, we're switching it up a little bit. We got some local sort of stories to talk about. And in studio today, we have a couple who have sort of been doing just that. They have been doing the things that we have begged young people to do, right? They have stayed. They have grown their professional selves. They came back in country, right? They moved back and forth, but they've attempted to create the space that they needed and wanted as they were aspiring in their careers. And today we are here to talk about a fundraising event with...
Dramatic entry, right?
Listen, when people come to your studio and they just turn it off, just hang it up. Please, or go outside. Yeah, just take it outside. When superstars come into your studio, they come with their own theme music.
You know what I mean?
And it's my fault because I big them up so much, right? But this morning I have Mr. and Mrs. Paul and Tanya Hanna joining us today to talk briefly about the Gratitude Concert, a fundraiser for a new musical. And I was about to say it's a children's musical, but then I remember y'all is discriminating, only do things for children. This have to be a musical for everybody.
You know, it is. But there are, we have casting, there are adults and there are children. So it's both.
So there's room for adults in this thing.
Yeah, it's going to be.
This is not going to be like an Annie where all the adults are bad guys, eh?
No.
Okay,
because
you're the young people and your discriminations.
I think you're going to be wonderfully surprised to understand the magic bag and what it does and Yubi. And really, it's...
But first of all, tell the people who you are.
Oh, hi, Bahamas. Welcome and morning. Hi, we're on Aaron's show at Radio Talk, Guardian Talk, Bahamas.
Paul and Tanya.
And I'm Paul. I'm Tanya. This
I'm
is Paul.
Paul.
And you guys are jazz musicians.
Yeah.
I don't want to limit you to that. What's your full complement of work? Jazz, classical?
You know, you have to do everything in the industry.
Genres.
Yeah.
You know?
Have y'all performed Rake and Scrape yet?
Yeah, I wrote a song. I got to give you that song. I'm going to give you that song.
You have a Rake and Scrape song?
I got a song for you.
Yeah, you got to have that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Paul and Tanya Hanna are like our, they should be our jazz poet laureate, right? They should be the standard for jazz in the country, because we have, in case you don't know, a large, wonderful jazz community.
It's growing.
Artists and audience members and supporters.
It really is growing.
It is wonderful, and it is supported not just by the musicians, not just by the people who come out to watch, but by the artisans that take the time to teach young people and old people. You know, music, how to play instruments, how to understand music, and how to perform.
Right, and we do that a lot. We mentor a lot of students. In particular, we have some really creatives coming up two in particular, they're very young, but seven, eight. But when you hear them perform, you think they're about 15, 16.
Wow, wow, that is awesome.
Yeah. So we're putting our hands back in and helping the industry to grow, connect us with the U.S., with giving them international exposure and also connection so that when they're ready to expand, they'll understand how to do that in the process. Giving them the recording experience early so that they'll understand that process and know how to bridge themselves.
All right, so the Gratitude Concert is a fundraiser for the musical Ubi's Magic Bag. Where and when is this happening, the concert?
It's going to be at the Dundas. Well, I say
is
the
it
Dundas.
Ubi or Abby?
Oh, is it Abby?
Abby.
So is Abby short for hubby?
No, it's not. You know, this is actually written back for in the 1960s.
Okay.
This is a bit of history, and it's really Paul's history. So, yeah, you're going to know some. When you see the characters, you won't know them by name, but they have significant meaning to the people of Baintown who lived in that area, who lived on that street, who they will say, oh, my God, you mean I'm there? Or, oh, my, you know, they'll see themselves or...
Those people
who lived in that area in Baintown will see themselves because it's in 1960s, and we still have a few of them living right now. So, yeah, it's going to be a wonderful...
So, Ubi's Magic Bag, the musical, is a 1960s classic children's story.
Yeah.
Based in Baintown.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. And so, when is the Gratitude Concert?
The concert is the 14th of August, and it's at the Black Box. I like to say the Dundas because I have to take the people back to the memory of where I'm talking about. So, yes, it's the Performing Arts.
Right, the Philip Burroughs. Yeah. Right, so the Dundas Performing Arts Center, the buildings.
There are two areas.
Right. The buildings inside the compound each now have their own name, right? And so I think it's the Philip Burroughs Black Box.
Right. Yeah.
And then it's the Winston Saunders main performing center. Right.
So the Saunders is being under the situation there. But the Black Box is operative.
Okay. And what are the costs available? Where can I buy tickets?
You can get them online. You can call me. That's what fans usually do. And then we also have the site, Aria Music Class, www.ariamusicclass. They can go there online and purchase tickets. Or they can call me personally, which is 802-8363. And then our flyers and posters are out there, so they'll see the extra numbers.
All right. And what are the COVID protocols for the event?
We're using the same guidelines because we're going to have food and everything. So when you have food, you got to eat. So the mask will be off.
All right. Yeah. But people, feel free. It's what I say to people, you know, feel free to make space, but also always be aware when other people are trying to make space, right? And the most important lessons from these is that we need to re-examine how we relate to each other and how we live with each other, you know? And so if you see someone trying to take space, let them take space.
Mm-hmm.
And if you see somebody that's okay, people that are okay, you know, be okay.
Right.
And take space if you need to take space.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is awesome. Okay, so who is performing at the Gratitude Concert?
For this, it's Paul and I.
Yeah.
We may have some surprises because we have some out-of-town flyers in. I don't like to...
Closer
to the date, I'll be able to say the names and everything. But it's going to be quite interesting. And I think people are going to love it. A lot of people missed. We sold out at the last concert.
Right.
A lot of people missed. They weren't able to attend, and they were like, when are you going to have another concert? So I'm glad we're able to do this.
All right. And so what did the ticket cost?
$75.
Okay, so watch this.
But maybe you have food? You have food with that?
Included?
Yeah, no, it's not included.
Okay,
yeah.
I understand.
Yeah.
So watch this.
Because this is a fundraiser.
I may not be able to get out, right? Or I was planning to go. Maybe I came down with COVID or something. I want to stay home and isolate, protect everybody else.
Online.
Can I pay you for a link online?
Online.
Say, like maybe I pay $30 and
online.
I get the link and I can
online.
Watch it online.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
This is awesome. I could tell you why. There's some people who are still hesitant about coming out, but they want to support.
Right.
And they'd give you the money anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
But to have the opportunity, now maybe I could get five or six of my friends. you know, we're all
well,
in the same pod.
The last concert we had online also, but most of our online are international because we, you know, like that call that came in, that was London. It's like, okay, all right, okay, we can't talk right now.
Well, see, that's why you got to praise the people at BTC.
Well, let me talk.
When the exchange knew that call was for London, they're like, don't hang up that call, that important. Don't hang that up. Okay, so this is this is awesome. Now, quickly tell us again. So you can't tell us what the story Abby's Magic Bag is about yet, right? It's a bit of a secret. Because every time I hear magic bag, look here. First of all, Mary Poppins had a magic bag. Second of all, Santa Claus had a magic bag.
Well,
third of all, I hear one Numbers Man have a magic bag, and I am the magic bag.
It's not that kind of bag. But the thing about it is that we wanted to have the curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to allow people to see life in a different way.
Yeah.
And so the word magic, because if you, I'm sure you've had some experiences mm-hmm. that you would, if you had to explain them, you would, you know, in a short word, you'd say magical. It was just a magical moment.
Yeah.
You know those serendipitous moments?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're just using another word for some of that conscious that conscious lingo.
Yeah.
That, yeah.
Yeah.
So
this
that
awesome.
Children around it, and then when they see the story unfold, they'll say, oh, okay, I see why they call that magical. It's not really magic, but it's just that life can have its magical moments when you're connected.
Absolutely.
And how many shows? Is it just one show, or are you going to...
Oh, you mean for this?
The concert. Yeah.
Yeah,
concert,
it's just going to be one.
Okay.
Yeah. But right. we have several rollouts mm-hmm. because we have a wonderful songbook out of this. And we're looking at, you know, we're presenting this the way how Broadway. This is like, just think of Broadway. Your experience is going to be Broadway. You have the playbill. You have the songbook if you're a musician. And if you're a school that you want to, hey, we like those songs, so we want
to. Give us a date and times again for the gratitude concert.
And we're early. We start at 4 o'clock.
All right.
Because most of our patrons, most of our clientele, customers, fans, they like early. They say, no, we want it early because we want to get home early. So we did it early. So we're 4 o'clock. We should get out by 8. And we're August 14th. That's a Sunday. Mm-hmm. They like it on a Sunday, too. So it's really designed for our fans, the dates and the time.
It's about jazz culture.
Exactly.
Right? That's what it is. People who listen to jazz, like mm-hmm. later than brunch,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Sunday afternoon, but I need to get back home in enough time to prepare myself for a nightcap so Billie Holiday and I could sit down and sip on this rum and cry about this man who loved me but ain't gonna never love me as much as he's supposed to love himself. Right? It's about the jazz culture.
I think that's a song.
Absolutely. Okay. And again, ariasmusicclass.com online to get in touch with you to purchase
tickets. Right.
And 802-8363
for
more information and to purchase tickets as well.
Yes.
Absolutely. Listen, thank you very much. We got to go to a break, producer. When we come back from the break, I'm going to have Mr. Romy Ferreira, and we are talking a bit about the oil spill. Look here. I need to talk to Abby about this magic bag. We're going to exhume, but we're going to go clean up some oil.
Yeah, we need to.
Something inside that magic bag and wake.
Yeah.
It is going
to work.
There's
something for that. Yeah, there is.
Absolutely. There's nothing the imagination can't fix, you know.
Exactly.
Nothing. Anyway, you've been listening to Paul and Tanya Hannah. I'm here with Mr. Mark Palmer on this World News Tuesday. You're on the clock. You're tuned into Guardian Radio 96 soon. We'll be right back.
I used to think of the bank as my personal ATM machine. If I wanted a new car, new furniture, a weekend trip to Miami, no problem, just max out the credit card or top up my loan. I was a big baller until I realized that 75% of my salary was going to pay back all those loans. Fidelity's personal financial coaching was the best solution. Fidelity gave me a plan with a debt consolidation loan that has a built-in savings that pays 5% interest. I now only have one low monthly payment, plus money in my pocket. Give Fidelity Bank a call at 356-7764 in Nassau or 352-6676 in Freeport. Visit any of Fidelity's locations or visit a website at fidelitygroup.com.
Fidelity. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Parents, it's that sweet time of year again.
The kids are going back to school, so pick up your copy of the Nassar Guardian's Back to School Supplement, because
it's the most wonderful time of the year.
Put your students in the latest styles at the lowest prices, because summer break is almost over, and our Back to School Supplement is filled with brand name back to school supplies at discounted prices, store locations, hours, and contact details.
It's the happiest season.
Advertisers, call the Nassar Guardian today at 302-2300 or call your account executive to get in on the 2-for-1 insertion deal. If it's uniforms, shoes, books, backpacks, calculators, art supplies, laptops, tablets, or whatever is on your back-to-school supply list, your ad should be in the Nassar Guardian's back-to-school supplement.
It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Nassau.
It can feel like insanity, but it's only temporary. See, one thought can change you completely when you fall into the sea. Set aside your inhibitions, in you are no limitations. You are full of creativity. Make it unity. For the moment, be alone to yourself. Your truth you'll embrace with each task you face when you fall into the sea.
Good morning. Welcome back, Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You're on the clock with Erin Green and Mr. Mark Palmer, and you're on the air with Mr. Paul Hanna and Ms. Tanya Hanna. And that song was Into the Sea. Yeah. Fall Into the Sea by Paul Hanna, and it is the perfect song to play for today, because my second guest, and we're talking about things that fall into the sea, right? But I love this Ubby's Magic Bag, because I bet you there's a bunch of imagination inside that bag, right? And it's unfortunate that a lot of us we can only imagine where we fit in to our own history. And for some of us, we can only imagine where we fit in to our own culture. But ventures like these teach imagination and cause young people to imagine beyond their current circumstance. Imagine things that nobody ever thought of before or nobody ever thought was possible. Right? And so, like, with this conversation, imagination is so important to me, because I grew up with a lot of fishermen and around a lot of seamen them who couldn't imagine that humans had the capacity to take care of the ocean. It's like, no, the ocean could take care of itself. There's nothing we could do to the ocean to destroy it, right? And in that, there's this sort of sense of, I felt a sense of loss, because in that is, and there's nothing that we could do to protect it either. Small, we're too small and powerless to do that. But it's important for us to entrench, like we like beating things into children. This is what you could beat into your children. This idea that you have the power through imagination. You know, yesterday we talked about the family as the nuclear family as the powerhouse of the country. But you have the power in yourself, in your family unit, to imagine beyond any circumstance you have experienced. And for us here in this place, I know that nobody ever imagined that our beaches could be destroyed. Right. Nobody ever imagined that contaminants and oil and diesel could wipe out anything that God put here. You know, and we've been forced to imagine, beyond imagine that, to live with that realization. But we still have the power to imagine our way out of it.
Exactly.
And imagine into reality solutions, right, for these problems, even the problems we didn't cause. And that's the most important reason why we have to cause these problems as a small island developing state. But as the non-corporate world, roughly 71% or more of the things that are negatively impacting the climate are caused by corporations. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But the expectation is on us, the ordinary man or woman who can't catch the bus with any regularity, who don't know when the power gonna be on or off. It's on us to solve it. And the only way we could do that is with the power of imagination. Mm-hmm. And so Paul and
that's
Tanya,
that's
Abby's
that's
bag.
It right there.
Because that story, that 60s Baintown story, is the story of people who imagined themselves out of abject poverty, out of states of despair, collective and individual. These are people who shaped a nation through their mere imagination. Right? And so when we hear elders, when we hear the current prime minister, the former prime ministers talk these stories, my mummy used to walk 7 miles to the Berry Islands every morning, right? And haul salt straight out the bottom of the ocean. These were sort of real stories, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were real stories.
Right.
And those people, Perry Christie imagined himself after dropping out of high school to become prime minister. Mm-hmm. And so that is, I mean, and he says it. He said he was a dropout. I think he was a dropout.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear Reverend Simeon Hall now tell the story in Choke Neck Alley, and he was in the class, and the woman said, "What you gonna do with your life?" And he realized, "I got to do something with my life."
Yeah.
He imagined beyond what everybody told him he's gonna be.
Right. Look at Alfred Sears. He's just an incredible story of the same thing. He was in a, you know, young offenders institution, he became an attorney, an AG. I mean,
look
how
at,
could you even imagine something like that?
Look
17?
At Scrooge, who was another host on Guardian Radio and a pioneer and a leader in the inner city Baintown and Grantstown community. Look at Utah Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Utah Taylor said, "Look here, I realize I need to find my daddy." And he imagined, he knew that that boy was out there, and he found him. To the point, it's like to the point where the father knew he was coming and knew what the father knew what he had to do when the moment arrived, right? And and Utah imagined that into being. And so it's important for us, particularly with issues like the one we're going to discuss today, to give our young people that same power of imagination. I have it. I imagine I could meet Nelson Mandela, and I did. I imagine I could go to the UN and go all over the place and talk to people like I have sense, and I did.
You did. That's right.
Right? And so we have to give other young people, other Bahamians, access to that same power.
Well, you know, when we researched this and to see what it would take, and you're looking at $1 million and some dollars, and I said, "Boy, okay, we getting
right into the mic, please, right into the mic."
I said, "Yeah, we have to imagine how to do this and get this done, just like they do the Broadway shows."
I didn't even imagine you know how to raise $1 million, Miss Anna. I need to come talk to you more often. But listen, we got to transition into our second segment. Producer, I know we had a little whoop there. Is the Zoom room back up?
Yeah.
Oh, good morning, Mr. Ferreira. Good morning. How are you? Thank you.
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Good, good. So joining us today is Mr. Romy Ferreira, former Minister of Housing and the Environment. And I have some questions I want to ask you as an expert of sorts, but because of your former position as the Minister of Housing and the Environment, I have some questions to ask you about the compendium of laws that were passed just before you left office. And some questions in relation to the oil spill that happened recently. Because sometimes it's access to information, coherent dialogue, the opportunity to hear stakeholders and industry stakeholders talk about what has happened that enables people to participate in the national discourse and to imagine solutions and the way forward. And so I would like to thank you for joining me this morning.
My pleasure.
All right, so let's get into it. Could you list the pieces of legislation in the package of laws that were passed before the general election?
Right, and thank you. So in 2019 is really when the largest compendium of environmental legislation was passed.
Okay.
But the salient ones are, there were about 14 bits of legislation, 46 individual declarations of marine protected areas, and a public-private ship partnership agreement. But the most significant ones, certainly for the basis of what you and I will be discussing mm-hmm. this morning with you, your guests and listeners, is the Environmental Planning and Protection Act, the Ministry of Environment Act, the Control of Plastic Pollution Act, mm-hmm. and the Forestry Amendment Act. Those four are like a central plinth. And then coming behind that would be the Access Benefit Sharing Act, which seeks to put genetic resources from genetic pirates. Mm-hmm. And then we had the public-private partnership at the New Providence Sanitary Landfill, which is also a huge, significant bit of legislation surrounding and introducing that concept. Mm-hmm. And then finally, I think the 46 individual declarations of marine protected areas. But I think another key bit is actually the introduction of the environmental impact assessment regulations, because that right there, along with the Environmental Planning and Protection Act and the Ministry of Environment Act, have the biggest capacity to punish and prosecute wrongdoers, as you would have seen as a result of the spill or any other environment type incident.
Okay, awesome. All right. So listen, first of all, this seems like a whole lecture. A 1 hour show wouldn't do it, but 2 hours could possibly do it. Wow. Okay, so let's get on to the next question. Are there any provisions mandating engagement with environmentalists and eco-NGOs or the public in the instance of a spill or an environmental incident?
Yeah, there are. The short answer is yes. Section 55 of the Environmental Planning and Protection Act sets out the penalties involved for an incident like this. You had 30,000 gallons of diesel spill. It was probably not intentional. The fines are up to $30 million. And the officers of the company are themselves subject to liability in person with imprisonment up to 10 years. So you're talking about a much more robust regime. And then also the assessment of damages, what it costs to actually clean up the area and the damage to the environment. All of that is taken into account and assessing even further penalties. So, you know, a robust framework. And underneath that, you have the environmental impact assessment regulations, which say that when an activity such as bunkering fuel, that they must have an environmental management plan. And it's under having that all NGOs are entitled to be consulted, because once you trigger the environmental impact assessment regulations under the Environmental Planning and Protection Act, NGOs, concerned civic groups, anyone, members of the public, anyone impacted by the activity then has a right to be consulted and their opinions and views taken into account. So that is the immediate structure that's really going to apply to what we saw take place in Exuma.
Okay. All right. And please let me know if there's anything that you cannot answer, right, or anything that you have to avoid because you are a former cabinet minister. All right, I'm not certain on what is.
Well, what I'm really speaking to you this morning as an ecologist, and chemist, and barrister at law. I've bracketed all the politics because, there's nothing really political about this in the sense that the laws are there on the books now. They never existed before, so we had no environmental laws up until 2019, until we produced them. We were plagued with intermittent dump fires until we produced the legislation behind the public-private partnership. Mm-hmm. Up until that point, nothing existed. So under the original framework, if this had happened, you would be faced with dealing with the Environmental Health Services Act with fines up to $5,000. Now, if you do some quick calculation, a diesel is probably about $7, $8 a gallon. that's 30,000 gallons, you're looking at about at least $250,000 worth of fuel or more that's actually in the water. So I'm pretty sure insurance claims are going to be had. You know, these are the kind, this is the that the those particular bits of legislation foresaw and was designed. And that is the mischief that that legislation is designed to correct once an incident like this happens.
So we have a lot of regulations by the sounds of it, which is actually a great thing. Like you say, if you don't have those regulations in place, you know, it's free for all. What is your thought about the government's commitment to enforcing those regulations? Because you hear little stories, you know, where the regulations are in place, particularly on environmental issues, that action is never really taken because people are politically connected or whatever. What is your thought? I mean, is there really a, are we going to really enforce these regulations against perpetrators down the road?
Yeah. Thank you for that question. Let me answer that by drawing a couple illustrations to you. Because at the beginning of the show, I listened to the conversation. Mm-hmm. And really, it was really a talk about, you know, sort of power structures. And I'll illustrate my thoughts this way. We passed an Access Benefit Sharing Act that is designed to protect the genetic resources from the big cosmetic companies of the world that come in here and plunder our resources. As a result of that legislation being passed, that whole industry is now regulated, and we will be entitled to any of the royalties that they find from any anti-cancer or any anti-aging miracle drug produced from extracts of DNA from our marine environment. Important bit of legislation. But in the administering of that, the bureaucrats took over that and exercised what you described as power structures or Foucauldian, you know, according to Michel Foucault, mm-hmm. I was listening to you quite clearly that. And so what you see now is that permits not being issued. So legitimate, sort of legitimate friendly people who are known to the government, legitimate researchers, legitimate institutions, Bahamians, mm-hmm. who are studying and researching the Bahamas and researching Grouper and Conch and all the rest of it, they can't get the permits. And this is because what you have is the over-enforcement of this particular act to the detriment of what it was set out to do. And it's almost as if like the original intent is being usurped. Mm-hmm. And then you take that particular incident and you say, wait, this is some kind of overzealous enacting. And then you follow it up and compare it to another situation in Exuma, where you have Thunderball Villa being produced. The developer is saying that it's a home, but it has amenities for over 100 guests. Its environmental footprint and carbon footprint is in excess of anything else around there. Mm-hmm. And all of this is in an attempt not to fall under the environmental impact assessment mm-hmm. regulations. And what we see is the government not enforcing that particular provision. And the only difference between the two is one is Bahamian and one is non-Bahamian. And so bringing all that back home to your question, it seems like we have at this juncture selective enforcement of these environmental regulations. And only at this point, it's causing hardship for some, and others seem to be able to circumvent the law. And this is the crux of the matter. What we want is the even-handed enforcement according to the rule of law of these regulations. Mm-hmm. And that's what we expect to see coming out of this diesel spill in Exuma. The enforcement of the regulation. Pay for the cleanup. You know, where's the oil spill contingency plan? Was it improved? We expect to see these things.
I was very concerned listening to the initial reports. I didn't hear any mention of relevant legislation or provisions that, you know, that kick in or that need to be assessed or applied in the situation. I didn't hear anybody talking about, well, the DEPP Act calls for an assessment by this date. 3 weeks out, we'll have an assessment to the public. There's a potential of a maximum fine of $1 million. I didn't hear any of that in the initial press statements from government authorities or in subsequent statements from government authorities. Is there a mechanism available, or let me ask this only because you may be familiar with the laws themselves and the space, like the sort of global legal space, is there a potential or is there an example of any other jurisdiction where a local government entity was able to sue the central government or challenge the central government in some way for their lack of enforcement over an environmental issue like this?
I personally don't know of any incident or circumstance where that happened. And it's difficult, given the local government legislation that we have in the Bahamas, to envision a local government taking action against central government, though it is possible. It's just due to the structure.
And the culture.
The way it's structured is going to make that very challenging.
I got you.
So and then it's all about resources. You're talking about an oil tanker bunkering fuel, and that's a multi-million-dollar operation. Mm-hmm. And so immediately you need resources of that caliber if you're going to bring action. Because remember that it's not for the government to produce a plan that says this is the oil spill contingency plan. It is for the vessel to produce their plan and say, this is our plan. Mm-hmm. And this has been approved by government. And this is signed by the Port Department. It is for them to demonstrate that. And so the government is in the position to demand the plan, evaluate the plan, to evaluate their response to the incident. So none of this is played out. And we're waiting to see what happens, in the sense that this is an important test case. Before this, prior to this, there was no legislation that dealt with it. Now you have a framework. You have cabinet ministers, special advisors to the prime minister, communication officers, all going around the world talking about climate change, all going to Africa, Asia. They're touring the world and they're talking climate change. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. That's an excellent thing. However, you also have to enforce the regulations, you know, else you lose the ethical argument. You can't go around talking and saying, asking to be taken seriously on the carbon credit market, and you just ignore 30,000 gallons of diesel being released into the ocean. Mm-hmm. You just ignore the environmental impact assessment regulations being applied to developers who are trying to circumvent our laws. Mm-hmm. And then you bring the rubber down and the anvil down on Bahamians who are just trying to get a research permit. Right now, there's some challenges in this enforcement area.
Absolutely. And people are going to say, well, listen, y'all are just beating up on the PLP unnecessarily, because we've seen that they've cleaned up 95% of that oil spill, and you're just making a mountain out of a molehill, or a sea cucumber hill. But the truth is, I have not seen or heard a timeline for midterm to long-term assessments of the immediate area, of the extended area around the bay. There's not been a schedule for assessment. Nobody has said, well, listen, this BNT and made these initial assessments, and this is the test that we're doing. We're doing a fish count. We see 5 fish here today. If we see 10 fish here tomorrow and 15 fish the day after, we know we're moving in the right direction. Something, anything. I haven't seen anything to suggest that the discourse is just on the surface, right? That this is our friend. We know who he is. He ain't running away, so we could be fine. He could pay us what he owes us. But it doesn't seem as if anybody's prepared to assess and tell us exactly what he owes us. But that's sort of an aside.
I mean, one of the implicit things is that a lot of these departments are under-resourced. They don't have enough people to deal with the situation when it arrives. And so the question is, do you think that whole environment, now that legislation being put in, has the infrastructure been increased or brought in line to enough people and manpower to be able to enforce that? Because I think sometimes there's a lag between the two, and that also causes problems.
Mm-hmm. And it also is a source of great opportunity for the imagination of young Bahamians to fill that space. Mm-hmm. And this is why the enforcement of penalties in this particular incident is important. You had 30,000 gallons of diesel go into the water. Immediately, that's going to start mixing. I know people think that oil and water doesn't mix. There's a little bit of a mixing zone. There's a immiscibility. There's an oily water mixture. There's an emulsion. If the ship is probably sitting at about 20 feet of water, 15 to 20 feet of water, that means that 30,000 gallons of oil, and we know due to the viscosity of diesel, all of that's tending towards a slick of one molecule thick. So it's constantly moving, it's constantly being dissolved and churned by wave action. And what you have is a toxic column of water, not just the surface, from the surface to about 12 feet down, moving out and around the exhumas and being diluted at the same time. So anything that gets in the way of that is going to die if it's within the sufficient concentrations, because you're dealing with two things. You're dealing with this toxic chemicals from the diesel itself, like the benzenes and the toluenes. Mm-hmm. And you're also dealing with the fact that when the diesel hits the ocean, it's going to break down, and that causes anaerobic conditions and oxygen depletion happens. And so you get a threat from both sides. So it's a significant spill, and it has impacted the wildlife. The only reason why you don't hear it is because no one is giving you the counts. No one is giving you the fish counts. How many fish have died? How many birds have died, yeah, if I dare say?
Or even how much Bejarina
on the shoreline?
And what is the impact on the sort of succulents and the shoreline plants?
Exactly.
If only we knew
the fire directly with the air.
Absolutely. I got two calls. Oh, first caller, I'm sorry. I was just about to get you, sir. When you're ready, if they're still there. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock.
How you doing, Aaron, and your guest?
Morning.
I just want to speak to Ferrero, and he made some points. I know he tried not to make it political. But based on my analysis and keen observation, the data, it points to the violation or discarding of the environmental laws as one, as a government that is desperate to obtain funding and is trying to reshape a pseudo-carbon offset credit market. And as such, I think it's time for the ecologists, the environmentalists, the environmental organization to have an actual conclave and begin to discuss where we are, where we need to be, and the processes of how we could get there, considering the Bahamas role from a global perspective. And I think somehow we need to have a real conversation separate from the emotive type environment of government, because we're allowing them to drive the conversation.
Absolutely. And it would be great if we could do it for the 50th anniversary, for the 50th independence celebration. Let's go. Thank you so much, C. Allen Johnson. Let's go to another caller. We can get to the second caller soon, producer.
If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try again.
Okay, I'm going to try this. Good morning, caller. You on the clock?
Yes, good morning, Ms. Green.
Good morning. How are you?
And good morning to Mr. Ferrero. We walked the halls of COB together. If he see you, this is, he'll be surprised. But great information, Mr. Ferrero. But what I haven't heard anybody talking about is evaporation rates. And because diesel is it's a lighter oil, and it's non-persistent, right? It has an evaporation rate. You know, I work around cooling towers. Everything has an evaporation rate. Gone. So that means that out of 30,000 gallons, according to the ambient temperature, a certain amount of that would have evaporated. And so I agree with you as far as all of the other contaminants within the diesel and the immiscibility. Great information and the selective environmental enforcement. Great information. You showed that I tell you the truth, I was impressed with it, but I haven't heard anything about the evaporation rates. And, of course, I was calling to say just what you were saying, the fact that they want, the Pima people believe that the diesel is cleaned up and everything is A-OK. They don't know a thing about chemistry. Thank you, Mr. Ferrero. Bless up.
Not just that, they don't know a thing about my people. They don't let me clean in nowhere. When they put me on a team, they do not put me on the cleaning unit. Why? Because I was a Bahamian. I just saying, some of us are very good at it, and others of us are very good about talking about it, right? But we know these things take just... It's a rhetoric, and that's one of the questions I wanted to ask. Since you've been sort of in the halls of government, Mr. Ferreira, does the government have the capacity to move at the speed of the ocean? Like we've got this new legislation, but are we doing the work to build the capacity to move at the speed of not just the contaminators, the offenders, but at the speed of the ocean current to the archipelago?
I don't think any government would be able to do that. But before I discuss that, I wanted to at least touch on what the caller had mentioned about the evaporation rate. And he's absolutely right. The volatiles within the diesel, the ones with the lower sort of boiling points, mm-hmm. you will smell them. That's what you're smelling as you approach the diesel spill. So in other words, the diesel spill is not just impacting the water column. It's impacting the air as well mm-hmm. until all of those are gone. So on that initial release, you'd have had water, the water column, the water surface, the shoreline, and the air all being polluted at the same time. And that is the seriousness of it. Now, whether or not we can move at ocean speed, well, speed is critical in cleaning up these matters, getting the sorbent materials on the ground, making sure that it's contained, making sure that none escapes into the sound. And that was some of the observations that I was making, that in the beginning, we saw no sorbent booms. We saw nothing to contain the oil from moving into the Exuma Sound. And each moment that happens, more and more is being released. So you have to, your response has to move at the speed of ocean. And it's up to the operator to do that. Now the government comes in and their job is to enforce the law. Much of this is going to devolve. Our Attorney General intends to action these prosecutions, and they don't have to be adversarial. There are potential fines to be collected. And the reason why this is important is because under the legislative rubric that we established, those fines can go towards a sovereign wealth fund that go to building capacity and training young Bahamians in science and training communities to be more efficient in the protection of the marine protected areas near them. So we have a cyclical arrangement envisioned in the law where potential tortfeasors, when these incidents happen, as a part of their penalty, some of that goes back into the system. And that is why it's important to start enforcing these. We cannot move forward as a country with selective enforcement on the environmental laws, because all that's going to happen is that that's going to amount to discrimination against one group of people, I'm sorry, to the expense of others.
Absolutely.
Well, the good news is they got the booms in mm-hmm. in quick time, which meant that the spill was contained, or it appears to be contained within that one bay. And so we have to congratulate them for doing that, and BPL for the work that they did in doing that. And so we just hope all these other issues, you know, the issues are going to be addressed as well.
You're very nice, Mark. For a second, I was back in my A-level math class, and I was going to tell them, prove to me that it is their action that kept, right, as opposed to the wave action. But that's just being petty, and we're going to give, not praise, but, you know, we're gonna give positive marks where positive marks are due.
Sure. Well, the boom, let's talk a little bit about that. When the boom is deployed, it'll curtail the oil, the diesel that's floating on the surface. Yes, it'll do that. But remember, it's also dissolving underneath. The boom is not going to stop any of that water column from moving underneath and spreading out. Yeah. Only the physical brown oil that you saw on the surface. So in diesel spills, it's not just what you could see that's causing a problem. It's the things you can't see, because that immiscible layer, that oily water mixture, that's essentially the color of the sea. You won't notice it's brown,
yeah.
But it will be loaded with toxins.
Absolutely. So I've got a call and some texts, some text for you as well, sir. Let's take that call. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. You got 30 seconds.
Oh, Lord. I call it as a stock in the way, along with you and your panel. Pretty.
Say group. Say group of eyes. I wear my group of shirt today, and they pretty.
Well, look here, Mr. What's your name again?
Palmer, and Mr.
No.
Ferreira.
Ferreira. Mm-hmm. Raymond Darling Ferguson here. How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Wonderful. Now, I appreciate and I thank you for that piece of legislation in which you had established while you were there. But a couple of questions and a comment, right?
You didn't get that much time, Raymond.
Is there anything within that piece of legislation whereby the public or the people that utilize the beaches or the people that utilize the sea for living condition, like fishing and stuff like that, can they sue the government or when the government haven't done the right thing?
Thank you, Brayman. That's an excellent question. Ferreira?
Yeah, the answer to that is yes, if it's impacted their livelihood.
Okay.
They can sue the operator to the extent that the government, remember, the government didn't cause the spill.
Right.
So you need to have causation and cause and effect
right.
in a legal sense.
So
the law is going to take a real strict look at that causation and most likely look at the operator.
All right. Thank you very much. Great answer. And I imagine there are measures in place for that. Listen, I'm going to run through these texts very quickly. A text here says, Mr. Ferreira is brilliant and we can only hope the government uses him. I pray that we're going to rewrite that. We can only pray that the government sees the capacity. Sorry. We don't want the government to use you. We don't want that. Please ask Mr. Ferreira how much of our seafood we can lose. Another text. Thank you, Mr. Ferreira, for learning us on the environmental laws. Another text says, I don't want people to move to Eleuthera because that was my idea to move to Eleuthera. I don't think Eleuthera is big enough for me and all the other people from Nassau to go. So everyone else could politely pick another island to move to, please. And in ghetto terms, do we have oil fish, Mr. Ferreira? That's the same person. Not in Eleuthera. Not in Eleuthera. A text here says, Aaron, the young people are smarter book-wise, but they are not critical thinkers. They carry on the status quo once it benefited them. They are not created to be a young child and change the plantation system, you know. It's very difficult. And that's all the text for this morning. I'd like to thank you, Mr. Ferreira.
Thank you.
Mr. Paul Hanna and Tanya Hanna with the Gratitude Concert. Coming up August 14th, Sunday, August 14th at the Black Box. You can reach out to ariamusicclass.com or 802-8363 for tickets or more information. And just one last thing, producer, thank you so much. COP, that's COP27 Journalism Fellowship in Egypt 2022. It's a fully funded opportunity. Go online and look it up, and tomorrow I will give you more details. Thank you for tuning in. You've been On the Clock. Have a great day, Bahamas. Guardian Radio AM is up next with Cecil Newry.
Hello? Keisha, you something else, boy.
Who this is? Tamika?
You ain't even remember my name? Wow, Dred.
Girl, I've been so busy. You still planning a trip?
Girl, and I can't wait. I right here online booking my car.
You dare planning trip. You vaccinated?
Girl, we had to. We ain't been nowhere since this pandemic started. Girl, and we got a 14-day vacation.
Best vacation ever.
Girl, are you though?
Well, I know you's gonna get the vaccine because you too like travel. When y'all get your vaccine?
Girl, long time. Because you gotta get your first dose, wait, then get your second dose at least 2 weeks before you travel. Johnny get his vaccine and he 12. Even Grammy get hers. Child, and Grammy say she ain't get no money. But I see her hiding that under the mattress.
Child, let me send my list because I know you going shopping.
Keisha, don't play with me.
Vaccinate today, live tomorrow. A message by PAHO, WHO, Canada, and USAID.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.